Hey, listeners, you are back on the air with Biz Culture Matters, brought to you by ExcellentCultures.com. I am Zach Gandra. Steve's here. Say hello, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
It is January 12th. You are 2 weeks into your New Year's resolution, Steve. How are you doing so far?
I'm just glad we made it through the Mayan calendar implosion.
Still talking about the Mayan calendar implosion. We are alive and well.
We are alive and well, but I don't know what the Mayans are doing these days.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. They're probably playing video games,
well, maybe,
kicking back,
maybe Dr. McKenna will be able to tell us from his studies when... We're going to have a great guest today, guys.
Just a great guest. We're excited about Dr. Rob McKenna, the professor at Seattle Pacific University, not the politician. So we want to make that clear for you guys.
We don't have any politicians on this show.
No, we haven't had it.
This is a show about ethics and value. No, he was a leader of a government agency and very much not a politician.
That is true. Just not a politician.
You know, a leader. So this is a show about ethics, values, and employee engagement. We don't do politicians.
That's right. We're not talking to politicians today. We're excited. But Steve, New Year's resolutions. Did you have any?
New Year's resolutions is to get through all the radio shows without having to re-edit anything because of mouth faux pas saying things that I shouldn't have said.
Yeah.
And then we had to cut them out.
Which clearly Steve has just given away our secret that we are not live, everybody, while you're listening at 7 a.m. on Saturday, January 12th.
Hey, we sleep in on Saturday mornings,
guys.
Oh, man.
I mean, whatever. You have kids, Steve. You're not sleeping in. I'm the one sleeping in.
Yeah, I know.
Enjoyably sleeping in on a Saturday morning. But we're excited, guys. We do have a wonderful guest today. Steve, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest, and I'll get him on the line.
Yeah, Dr. Rob McKenna, a.k.a. Bad Bobby, is a great leader that I've had the opportunity to know for a few years now. And, you know, Rob is a very unique human being in that he is a 44-year-old industrial organizational psychologist with an MBA and a PhD, leads the industrial organizational psychology department at Seattle Pacific University, and has in the neighborhood of 80 master's and doctorate level candidates under his tutelage in his program. Now, these are not just psychologists. These are master's and doctorate level business psychologists, the future of the brain power of human resources in leadership and in organizational development are in Rob's classes and in his professor's classes. And Rob also is a very avid Xbox video gamer, a.k.a. Bad Bobby is his avatar. So if you see Bad Bobby show up and you're online, you know, duck, hide, get out of the way because he's coming.
Blow him up, 12-year-olds. Yeah, yeah, blow him up, 12-year-olds.
Yeah, Rob is also very unique in that he's an entrepreneur as well. We'll get him to talk to you about his badbobby.com leadership development site. Greatest online leadership development tools I've ever seen for self-discovery and self-improvement if you're in the world of leaders that want to improve and become better leaders. Also, his book, Dying to Lead, all about self-sacrificing leadership in a non-self-sacrificing world. So Rob's a great guy. We're glad to have him today. And we're going to pick your brain, Dr. McKenna.
All right, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing good.
Doing good.
Yeah, we're doing great. Yeah. We understand that you're broadcasting to us from the man cave there in Kirkland today.
From the man cave.
Yeah, the man cave where Bad Bobby gets all of his supercharged superhero doses of stuff to come out and do these fabulous battles in Xbox Live.
So before we get into any business talk, Rob, I want to know, did you get the new Call of Duty?
Of course I did.
And how you doing? How you doing on against those 12 and 13-year-olds online?
Kind of frustrated you even said that. In fact, when I went to purchase the game, I was in the store and there were a couple of 12 and 13-year-olds in line in front of me, and the guy at the counter said, "Hey, sir, you here to pick up your copy of Black Ops 2?" And I said, "Yeah." And he looked at his coworker on the side and he said, "Hey, Doug, can you help this older gentleman?" And at that point, I went straight home to destroy some of those youngsters online.
Nice, nice. It's really horrible online when you're playing games and the 12-year-old across the country is swearing at you like a drunken sailor.
It is. Yeah, well, you know, speaking of that, it's funny because a lot of people don't understand sometimes why I would have, you know, called a mainstream leadership development process because it's actually called, it's named after my gamer tag, Steve was mentioning, and people say, you know, why would you do that? Why would you call a process like this something like that? And, you know, the inspiration for
I still think process, it's crazy. I mean, but you're a wild and crazy guy, so go for it, Rob.
Yeah. Well, it was probably several years ago when the game Halo first came out, and I went, I was playing that game, and I realized you could go into the website the day after you played, and you could take a look at these maps where you had, the night before, you know, I had played a few games, and you could look at a map, and you could look everywhere on the map where you had either been killed or killed, you know, another avatar in the Halo world. And I one night I went in there and I saw all these different metrics, and the one piece I saw was that I kept getting beaten by people who would pick up this particular weapon on this map. And I realized, hey, I didn't realize there was this rocket launcher in the bottom part of this map. And and for all the people that aren't gamers, they're all lost right now.
Don't worry. We are talking to a college professor here with the great leadership.
With degrees and everything.
Yep.
And so the next time I got a chance to play, I went in and I went straight for that rocket launcher. And then I went in the next morning to look at my statistics, and my score had gone up by 25% just because I realized where this rocket launcher was. And the reason why that was important was because, you know, this is what happened several years ago. And I thought to myself, what if we could create a way for people to get more intentional, to see the, quote, rocket launchers across their career,
wow,
maybe the opportunities and the experiences that they might want to have that they didn't recognize before. And so a lot of the inspiration, you know, one of the inspirations anyway, was seeing all these gaming architectures and the way that they tracked metrics, but the way that they also helped people to learn. And so that was, you know, many years ago now. And so when we created badbobby.com, the process that Steve was describing, we wanted to create a process that would not only give people sort of a framework or a structure or like a scaffolding to see opportunities they might not otherwise see, but also to kind of help them get real about their learning and development. Because the other half of that story is, as you guys were describing, is I'm a 44-year-old college press professor, you know, semi-talented athlete, father, husband, business professional, musician, and I'm also a gamer. And I thought, in order to really get at the development of a person, something has got to be real. It's got to be something that gives people an opportunity to kind of show up in their, you know, in their real way, and whatever that means, and in a safe way where they feel like they can bring themselves to that process. And, you know, for me, that's really been the driving force behind all of the work that we're doing, is creating spaces, tools, and resources for leaders that allow them to get real about their learning, about their experiences, about what they're trying to get done, about the development of their character. And that's really been, whether it's the our Center for Leadership Research and Development, or whether it's badbobby.com, kind of the whole emphasis, or whether it's with our students, that's kind of been the emphasis there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And there's a parental lesson in there, too. Parents, your kids may not be wasting time while they're playing video games.
That's absolutely right. It may not be.
Yeah, we're going to take a break here in a second, but when we get back, I'm going to ask Dr. McKenna to give us some of his perspective on this open space, out-of-the-box, creative learning styles. I had the opportunity last year to attend one of his classes, which was kind of like a educational learning free-for-all full of MBAs and PhD candidates there at Seattle Pacific University. And it was an amazing experience because I think, and Rob, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, you had like all 80 master's and doctorate level candidates in industrial organizational psychology, and your professors who are all, you know, doctors of industrial organizational psychology, in the same room at the same time, and kind of a massive open space, free for all. Let's find out what you're really passionate about and you really want to learn. And it turned into something really, really phenomenal. So be thinking about that over the break, because when we get back, I want you to tell our listeners kind of what you learned from that, what your students are learning from that. And keep in mind, Rob's students are probably, what, 25 to 55? Is that a good space of age?
Yeah, it is. 25 to 35 is kind of a sweet spot, and then we do have some folks with a little bit more career experience, too. So.
Yeah, well said. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Biz Culture Matters, brought to you by ExcellentCultures.com on Clay 1180. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And we're back with Biz Culture Matters. Today on the line, Dr. Rob McKenna, the college professor and leadership extraordinaire, video gamer, father, dad. We're excited to have you on, Rob. Steve, go.
And semi-talented athlete.
Semi-talented. I love that. Last week's show was with the golf company, and they actually are athletes. Yeah. And now we've got a semi-talented athlete.
Yeah, and then a few weeks ago, we had... Tim O'Donnell, the world champion triathlete. So it's great to have a semi-talented athlete who is a multi-talented intellectual athlete. So, Rob, before the break, we were talking about, you know, this whole concept of, you know, out-of-the-box creative learning in different ways and developing leaders in different ways. My picture of a college class is usually something you go in and you sit in a chair and you make sure you can take good notes and you listen to a boring lecture, try to write down all the key points and make sure you can regurgitate them when it comes time to take the test, and then just thank God that you got out of there with a decent grade. And what I experienced in your style of learning there at the Industrial Organizational Psychology Department at SPU was so close to being exactly the opposite of that that you couldn't even really call it an opposite. I mean, tell us a little bit about your work in developing leaders in this open space style of learning that you kind of developed from your video gaming experience.
Well, first of all, I want to say, guys, if you'd like any semi-effective golf lessons, I'm available for that. I can't make any promises, but I can do that for you. The first thing is that we spent actually about a decade doing research on the most critical experiences that leaders face. And so we studied, at this point, it's been thousands of leaders, and asking them questions about the experiences that change them forever. And what came out of that doesn't surprise many people is that the kinds of experiences that people describe, whether they're first-level managers, whether they're executives, whether they're community leaders or wherever, is they describe situations that were deeply personal. And where situations where there was a feeling of being exposed, many situations where they faced failures and mistakes, situations where they felt, you know, both courage and also reluctance, and situations where a lot of people were watching them. And, as I described before, it really has been this ongoing theme in the work that we do. And even prior to describing that open space experience, Steve, that you were mentioning, is one of the greatest challenges that I face, you know, is that an individual within a business really knows that there is a real story of their learning and development. But so often, we set up structures within businesses that sort of create barriers to people bringing their full selves to that learning process. And one just very basic example of that is when organizations set up a very rich developmental tool for people, and then then the business itself then wants to own the information about the person. And one of the challenges with that is that if I know my manager is going to be looking over my shoulder, then it creates immediately a barrier for me to bringing my honest self to that conversation.
So they basically lie rather than put their heart in and tell the truth.
Well, yeah, and there's always going to be, you know, a certain sense of how much of myself do I want to share in any situation. But when we set up barriers for them to even begin to bring their honest selves to that process, then how real is that learning process for them? And it does relate to, I mean, that's one of the biggest things that we've heard with the tools that we provide is people say, wow, this really encouraged me to own my own learning and development and take ownership of that. And who wouldn't want that as a, you know, as a leader or as an individual? And I, so this class that you were describing, Steve, I read an article in Fast Company magazine several years ago, and the article was describing this process that Facebook goes through, and they call it hacking Facebook. And it was where it's an all hands meeting. They bring everyone together in Facebook to try to break Facebook, with the understanding that hackers aren't just necessarily trying to break things, but they're trying to break them for the sake of making them better.
Yeah.
And so I thought to myself, you know, what if I could create a class or an environment, even a learning environment, organizational structure, where everyone showed up, everyone across the, you know, the program that I run at Seattle Pacific, and everyone showed up, all faculty were there, all students were there, and lots of business leaders would be invited. People like yourselves, you know, have been to it. And the alumni would come back, and it was a process where, if we had one place in the program where it wasn't just delivering content, but it was you as the student or as the participant, whoever you are, if you come to this class, you're going to be responsible for the learning process. You're going to be responsible for where this goes. So we set up this basic structure. We described it like a swimming pool, you know, like a public swimming pool, where there are certain rules about, you know, here's the pool, you may have to shower before you get in, no running on the tiles because that's dangerous. But once you get in the pool, where you go and how you play in the water is up to you. And so that's what we did. And we set out some certain, like, performance metrics for ourselves that were kind of crazy. Things like we wanted to make sure that every week about a third of the students or the participants in the class hated it and two-thirds loved it, and that the third of people who hated it changed every week. So it's kind of a weird way to think about effectiveness, but we thought if it's that on the edge, then certainly the numbers of us who would really love the experience might change every week. We also wanted to see if business leaders would come, and sure enough, after 2 years of doing this, we've had, you know, half dozen to a dozen business leaders who have come, not to speak, but to participate with a really smart, you know, high intellectual horsepower, but really amazing group of people, of young people, these emerging leaders, and just hang out with us. And I got to tell you guys, it has had, I don't want to put, you know, everything onto this class, but it has had such a tremendous impact on our program, on the community of learners that are there, and even the sense of what it feels like to be a part of the program. It's the first class that students take when they come in the program. So imagine, you know what a traditional learning structure looks like, our classroom. Imagine coming to a program with 80 really smart people, and you're immediately put in a room and expected to own the process.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said.
Yeah, so it's been tremendous. It's been just awesome.
One of the things that I admired about Rob, well, actually, let's go back further. When I first was introduced to you, and I was checking you out online to scope you out to find out if you were just some weird, boring professor or if it was worth, you know, really investing the time to have lunch.
That's called
coffee.
Stalking, yeah. By the way.
Yes,
Steve.
Stalking. Isn't that what you have Google for? I mean, isn't that what Google is all about? And
right.
In all of the being in all the great search engines is to stalk people without breaking the law. I was stalking you out. One of the things that I noticed was, you know, a central theme that was running through, you know, your book, Dying to Lead, that it was about, you know, developing leaders who were about sacrificing self for the cause of the greater good, as opposed to give it to me now, give it to me fast. It's all about me, 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 like we hear so much of. And as you know, the theme of this series of shows is developing cultures of ethics, values, and employee engagement. And then when I got on Bad Bobby, your leadership development site, and actually joined up and got in and did my first Leading Under Pressure assessment, you know, I discovered by answering the questions and looking at the reports that it generated that, wow, you know, my biggest challenge of, you know, where I have the most pressure in leading is as a father, not necessarily in business. And I saw some things about myself that came out when I was leading under pressure that was taking place with, you know, our 11 adopted kids, our 9 adopted and 11 natural kids, mostly the adopted kids where we've had most of the high pressure situations, that were, wow, this is making me see some stuff that I don't like. And now that I see it, I want to go about changing it. And then I got into your class and realized that, whoa, this whole environment is about making a third of the people hate the class. And yeah, what that third of the people would do is they would rise up and do something to change it in the next week. So while they're changing it and making it better, they become, you know, the guys who love the class. So my question, Rob, is within the context of everything that you're doing and do, you know, obviously you're a ethics, values, and employee engagement guy, and you study it, and you have students who are studying it and writing, you know, theses on it all the time and doing doctoral dissertations on it. I mean, what do you think ethics, values, and employee engagement is all about? And because we're getting close to a break, I want you to, you know, kind of process that for a bit. And then when we get back, you know, give us your perspective on it, because ethics, values, and employee engagement are kind of the hot search words on the search engine, you know, optimization analysis, right? The SEO stuff these days. And most of what I read when I search it out is just a lot of fake people trying to advertise how great they are, but not necessarily living it. You know, one of our guests called it ethics, you know, corporate ethics in Oz. Like, you know, one thing behind the Wizard of Oz is one thing behind the curtain, another thing in the public forum. So when we get back from the break, we're going to hear Dr. McKenna tell us his vision for a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement.
All right, you're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. We'll be right back.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
And we're back, listeners, with Rob McKenna, Dr. Rob McKenna, not the politician, the gaming father, business leader, professor from Seattle Pacific University, and Steve Gandra. Steve, go refresh us of that question you were asking Rob.
Okay, before the break, I was asking Rob, as a professor and an entrepreneur and a leader and a author and most of all a values-based, ethics-based leader, what his vision for a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement would look like in today's organizations and today's society. Go for it, Rob.
Yeah, Steve, I loved your reference, reading some of your stuff and knowing you to the Wizard of Oz and that whole idea of what's going on behind the curtain. I often describe our this is kind of the overarching mission of my life. You know how each of us has kind of one good sermon? I think people hear mine pretty quick. But one of the things that when I describe Bad Bobby as a process, and you heard me say this before, I always describe it as scaffolding. And when you think about what scaffolding does on a building is that I always think of window washers, or people painting a tall building. What scaffolding does is it gives us access to parts of something that we wouldn't otherwise have access to. So, the kinds of tools that people provide in leadership development and businesses are providing, if they're providing good stuff, what they're providing us is access to parts of ourselves that we might not otherwise know how to access. And so when you were describing your life across the boundaries, surprisingly, it doesn't surprise some of us, but it happens and it comes up in different ways where we realize that, my biggest leadership challenge isn't necessarily my work, but it's with my family. And so that's something that I think is, and it sounds kind of obvious to us, but when we think about the kinds of things that we often provide to people, we don't provide those kinds of necessary tools. And the way that relates, I think, to this issue of ethics and values, if you look at most, I have to be careful when I say that, because it's always an empirical question as a scientist. When you say most, you have to be careful. But
so you can set the scientist hat down for a while.
Okay.
I don't think we have many scientists listening to us this morning.
Not ones that look into the statistics of their gaming, for sure.
someone asked me recently, they said, if you had to choose, would you choose between being a leader, a philosopher, or an entrepreneur? And I thought it was a great question. But I recently wrote an article. It was called The Character X Factor. And one of the things that I was trying to describe in there is that a lot of the research that's been done and even the public sort of published writing on ethics and character and values, it typically shows up as a list of virtues.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. It's like, be courageous. Be a person of wisdom. Be humble. It's this list of be honest. And the challenge that we have seen over and over again inside of a leader, as you talk to leaders, is not this list of virtues, but it's this what I would describe as this list of competing tensions. That it always within us. When you think about, for example, the issue of integrity. And when I describe integrity, I think of a building with integrity as a building that has structural. It's almost unchanging, and people describe that in people as the person does what they say they're going to do. It has structural integrity. We know what to expect. But there's a whole other tension that leaders face around that, and it's around the issue of vulnerability. Because we want leaders who have tremendous structural integrity, but they're also vulnerable and permeable so that the information can get in and they might actually change their mind in different situations. And so I think one of the challenges we face, and this is the reality, I think, of the human experience, is that it's not a list of virtues. That what was going on in the wizard behind the curtain was a set of tensions in his own identity, in sort of wrestling with what am I good at, but then he's also perfectly aware of every place in his life where he's failed. And so how do we create spaces for people to have very honest conversations? And that, I get back to this whole learning and growth idea. If we don't do that, we set people up for failure because every one of us, when we take a little bit of, even just a glimpse, one step below the surface, we all of a sudden see, holy cow, I have failed, multiple times. And so the idea is getting people to figure out, how do I deal with this very real person that I am? And then if we create that space, then maybe we begin to transform organizations. I feel like it's, in my work, and I can't get away from this, is that one good sermon is that so often with the clients that I deal with, the challenge is kind of getting them to create those open spaces where people can really deal with the real challenges of brokenness, of their, of some pretty deep issues inside the human spirit. But it's not that scary because everyone's having this conversation over a beer or a cup of coffee anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of one take on that, Steve.
Yeah, that's very well said, that it's if you can touch the deep side of the human being in the leadership process, then it becomes real and passionate and engaging. One of the things that we've been talking a lot about on the show lately is the recent Gallup poll, where 71% of American employees are effectively disengaged in their jobs. I mean, people showing up just to get paid and then go do what they really are passionate about and want to do. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because people have more fun having fun these days, it seems, at least according to the polls, than they do going to work. And what I hear you talking about is having fun going to work, which is almost the, antithesis of what it is that we're reading the Gallup poll tells us about our society. So, I mean, Rob, what are your thoughts on the connection between engagement and ethics and values in our workplace today, in businesses and in society today?
Yeah, it's funny when you were talking about Dying to Lead, my book. And by the way, if you want to write a book that's difficult to sort of communicate at the very beginning, I've gotten much better at it now, but write a book about sacrifice. It's much easier if you look at most airport bookstores to write books about the opposite of that. It's funny, one of the mistaken assumptions that people have made about my book, because the subtitle is Sacrificial Leadership in a Self-Centered World, is that what I'm talking about is martyrdom. And that's a very different thing, than this idea of what does it mean to be a sacrificial leader? Does it mean that I always lay myself down for my followers and that I do everything it takes to create engagement for everyone? And what I describe this in the book, that I at the same time, when I was writing this book, I have a very sincere and heartfelt, I can't help but get away from it, desire to build up leaders as well as get them to consider the sacrifices that they maybe need to make. I describe it in the book as, what is at stake for you personally and for the people around you, and would you be willing to pay the price to respond to those stakes? Is a much more important question than what should you be sacrificing today? And I think the idea of engagement would be to kind of begin to rethink what it means to invest in people. So one example of this is that my clients, having done this work for the last couple of decades, that one of the most common variables that people were interested in was employee retention. And think about what employee retention is driven by, because when companies talk about that, they're talking a lot of times, even today, talking about knowledge management. And not even knowledge management sometimes has been another nice way of saying, how do I keep everybody else from seeing what I know? And so if I can retain you, then I can, then it's better for my business. And of course there are costs related with turnover and all that. I'm not denying any of that those things. But here's the problem, is that companies want to retain people, but no one wants to be retained. They want to have a job.
Well said.
But they don't want to be held in chains to their job.
Well said.
And so what I told, what I tell my client organizations that they should be thinking about, instead of thinking about retention, and this is, talk about something that's controversial, what I tell them is, what if you thought about employability instead? What if you thought about, how do I make this person increasingly employable? And the tension, of course, is that now I'm sort of helping people learn how to go get other jobs, is one way to look at that. But there's a different way to look at that, because like I said before, everyone wants to be more employable. And if my company were investing in me that way, then I'm probably more likely to stay for the right reasons anyway. So what does it mean to begin to even sort of include employees in that conversation that you started, Steve, about what it means to be engaged? And that is really difficult for a lot of managers to do. So I'm not taking that lightly. To begin a conversation for so many managers that I get a chance to work with their people about, so, I mean, I can give you one basic question that causes a lot of anxiety. What do you need from me? For some managers to even begin to ask that question feels like, holy cow. And there's a variety of reasons they don't want to answer it, because maybe they say, I can't provide what they might need.
It's a very deep, deep, solid question. You know, as you talk about this concept, you know, your philosophy of engagement, what seems to stand out, and I spent a lot of time listening to our guests and kind of highlighting points that we pull out that are these nuggets of greatness that if folks could learn them and implement them and do them, it almost seems kind of simple to realize that if you work for a company who is all about helping you be what you want to be, you end up hanging with the company as opposed to going to look for something else, because they care more about you being what you want to be than they do about what you can do for them so that they can be who they want to be.
Yeah.
And that's phenomenal. Yeah, that's got to be one of the subject matters of your next book. So we're going to go to a break here in a second, Rob. But when we get back, we want you to talk to us about, you know, kind of put on your coach's hat and talk to us about, you know, what advice you can give to today's business leaders from everything you've learned about engagement and sacrificial leadership, your book, and, you know, the concept of sacrificial leadership, in your book, Dying to Lead. And, you know, from Bad Bobby and from your work in the open space leadership development process with your industrial organizational psychologist, give some advice to our listeners on what they should be thinking about, what they should be doing in order to maximize the effectiveness and performance of their businesses in the next season.
We're going to break. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters, brought to you by ExcellentCultures.com on Clay 1180. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And we're back with Rob McKenna, Dr. Rob McKenna from Seattle Pacific University, author, coach, consultant, business leader. Steve, you are getting to the nitty-gritty about getting the coaching out of Rob. Let's get him going again.
Yeah, Rob, tell us, you know, tell our listeners, our business leaders who are listening, you know, what they should be thinking about with leading their people, with their employees, with engagement, with ethics and values, and how to turn all that into a profit so they can survive challenging economic times.
You know, Steve, the first thing that I thought of when you were talking was, why are you? And why are you was this an event we held last May on the Seattle Pacific University campus. And it was similar. I mean, Steve, you were a part of helping to lead that. Zach, you saw this thought as well.
And, I did. And
it was similar to the open space class we described, but I wanted to create that same space over a couple of hours for, you know, for hundreds of business leaders to come and just people just like you and me, even if they weren't leaders, if they were business leaders, they were leaders in their homes. We had stay-at-home parents who came, community leaders, people that were volunteers show up. And we're doing it, by the way, we're doing that again on May 19th, this coming spring. And it was just one of the most tremendous events because, as you guys know, we didn't bring in a big-name speaker. And it was that's pretty edgy in and of itself because people so often want to be spoken at. And one of the things that we all know is that sometimes when you bring in big speakers, it makes people feel small. And so we wanted to create a two-hour space where we would deal with issues around work, life, hope, faith, and family in a safe environment and have a two-hour conversation. It was just awesome. But the experience itself of leading that thing, because I found that, you know, we had, there were 45 to 50, I would call them emerging leaders who ran the event. And one of the first things that I found out was, because I'm so used to dealing with more senior leaders, that when I gave these folks these leadership roles, then I began to edit them. So if this makes sense, they were given this role of, hey, you're in charge of this part now. And then when we began to edit them, they got really frustrated. And one of the things that I had not prepared them for was that when you're given a leadership role, you have got to be editable, if that makes sense. You know, it was this sense that, hey, I've got this now, this power. You don't get to tell me what's going to happen around this. And I wish I had thought of that sooner with that group of leaders because it didn't occur to me. But when you were talking about kind of what advice would I have for leaders, you know, I one thing is to make sure you are clear about where you are going and why. I deal with client organizations all the time in helping them to try to not lose talent, you know, to not lose young. They all want, how do I get this emerging generation of high-impact, really talented people to want to work within my organization? And so often, you know, one of the biggest challenges is that the organization itself lacks a spirit. And that spirit, whether we like it or not, so often is driven by the person who has the power to make the strongest statement about the spirit of what the organization is about. And so my first piece of advice personally for many leaders I deal with is let's get crystal clear on what it is you want and why you want it. The second piece of advice, Steve, that's the personal advice, you know, is that so often I say is when as soon as I hear someone who, because a lot of leaders are really big talkers, is shut up. And it sounds kind of harsh.
We're gonna tweet that one. You know, leadership 101.
It's what you've been telling the 12-year-olds online while you're playing video games the whole time.
You know what? The chapter on listening in my book is called Shut Up. Because and the funny thing is this, that the leaders who will not stop talking, they don't take that personally when I say that to them because they already know, yeah, I know, Rob, that's my problem. And if I can just get them to be a little bit quieter in the next staff meeting that they're in, I tell leaders, I dare them, if they're the big talkers, I dare you to go into the next three meetings you have with your leadership team, whether it's your, and I dare you to shut up for 15 minutes. I dare you to ask your team what they think about how the team is performing. And when there's a moment of silence, do not say anything. I think it's great advice for me because I can fill a room with my voice when I'm in a leadership role too. In a broader sense, though, I think from an organizational perspective, for leaders who have the power and the possibility of really changing their organization, is one thing is think about what it would mean to create spaces or tools for your employees to help them learn and grow on the job in real time. Like, what would it mean? What kinds of things should people be thinking about to help them learn in a way that's also real to them? So give them ownership of that information. You know, have at least one space where people can be real with themselves and with the people around them who are their trusted feedback network. Give them at least one space. I'm not saying it always has to be that way, because certainly managers are a part of the conversation and are responsible, you know, for seeing some of that. But that's the other piece of advice I say is create one space where people can own it for them, you know, have it for themselves.
Those are great points. Shut up and create a space where people can own it for themselves. So yeah. in the context of, you know, all the work that you've done, Rob, where have you seen the wheels start to come off? I mean, where do good intentions go bad? You know, you've got these, you know, exciting businesses that start off. I mean, we interviewed Jack Hollis, the vice president of the Scion division of Toyota, not too long ago for one of our blog articles on the culture blog at excellentcultures.com. And he told us that, you know, his view was that businesses, you know, get into business to serve their customers. And they mm-hmm. build the business based upon serving their customers. And then as they grow, they realize that they need to serve their employees or their customers don't get served. Or they don't get served as well as they could get served. So that they get into business to serve their customers. They develop cultures around serving their employees who serve their customers. And then they forget about it all because it becomes all about the quarterly report or the sales report or the numbers for Wall Street or the profitability or the sustainability or the survivability or the employee engagement scores and all of these numbers and things that are about people but aren't really people. I mean, where have you seen the wheels start to come off in businesses and organizations who, you know, maybe have great ideas and start out good, but then it starts to slip? I mean, what advice can you give our listeners on what to watch out for?
Well, you know, it's funny. You were making me think of the famous story of David and Goliath. And the reason why is this, is that so many of us, you know, when we've heard that story, we immediately relate to David. You know, I think most of us, he ends up being the hero in the story with a slingshot, you know, and slaying a giant. But I found it really interesting to look at that story from the perspective of Goliath. Because many of the leaders that that I know, that I respect so much, the biggest challenge that they have faced is that they have become a Goliath.
Wow.
And in fact, they got rewarded because of their success. And what's interesting about the story is, if you go read that, is that little passage spends a lot of time, when it describes David and Goliath's story, describing all the things that it took to support Goliath himself. The people that it took to support him, just to carry around all of his junk, you know, and how heavy all that stuff was, the stuff that he used in battle. And what it made me think about is, the name of this chapter in my book was Successful Leaders Have a Lot to Carry.
Yeah, they do.
You know, because you start to get handed stuff. You start to get handed stuff that's not only real things like financial resourcing, and tools and processes and people and buildings and plants, you know, manufacturing plants or websites or whatever else, but you also get handed a bunch of stuff that gets really heavy on your identity. Stuff that says, that's my technical term is stuff. These are things that become, you know, I am who I am because of my success. I am who I am because of my ability to move into the future and create really innovative things. And I think, you know, you're asking such a big question, but, you know, because I focus on leadership, and I'm not invested in leaders because it's all that, because it's neat and it sounds fun. I'm invested in leaders because I'm just surrounded by and grew up with leaders who carried such a tremendous burden. They're the ones who, you know, I'm telling you, you want to watch the questions in your life change in an instant. Go from leading no one to leading people. You know, it's like now all of a sudden I've got this burden. Now what I do see is you know, a lot of people get promoted into leadership roles because of their success and not necessarily because of their success at actually leading people. I mean, there's some pretty clear research on that. about how people get promoted because of results, not necessarily results related to actually managing people well. So when the wheels, I think, you know, from a leadership perspective begin to fall off, is where leaders are either they're so burdened down by so much of the success, and then what happens is they fail. You know, this can happen even later in someone's career. I have people that I've coached who they owned this thriving business through the 80s and 90s, and then suddenly something happened where some of those financial wheels started to come off, and they had their identity was so wrapped up in being the Goliath that they really didn't know how to adapt to the possibility of, man, I'm not just humble. I mean, I don't even know what that is. I am being humbled.
Yeah.
And I know it's not necessarily the spirit of your question about, you know, when the whole organization starts to come off. Because that, you know, to be honest, that happens to all of us. Some of those things are outside of our control. But, you know, when I think about what leaders can do to create environments where, like I said before, where it's honest. Where it's, and sometimes, you know, being a person of integrity does not feel good. You know, that's the other thing about leaders, is they're aware that I can make this decision and someone else is going to suffer. You know, there's this, you know, someone else is not going to like what I do. So that's one, I think it's one challenge. I think success and structure builds up. It just naturally builds up things inside of us that are actually the opposite of vulnerability.
It's great, you know? great content. As I was listening to you, as we listened to you and all of our guests share these little nuggets and pearls of wisdom so that they can become, you know, pithy tweets and specific content that leaders can learn from and develop cultures that excel and succeed and are sustainable for the long haul. What I'm hearing you say is, number one, if you're a Goliath, you know, a leader of a mature organization or a large organization, start looking around you and find out how many people do you have that are there to carry your baggage, and how much of it is baggage and how much of it is serving your customers and serving your people. And it may be time to start getting rid of some of the baggage. And then if you're an entrepreneur on the other side and you're just kind of starting up, it's like, how much baggage are you carrying that somebody else is more talented and more gifted and should be carrying? But the only reason you're carrying it is because you don't have anybody, you know, you don't have anybody to carry it but you. And it's kind of those, you know, you said it well, the competing thoughts, the dichotomies of one versus the other again. And then the whole perspective of, you know, how easy it is to get lost in yourself and your thoughts and your deal and your own self-deception and forget about, you know, why are you doing this? Are you, you know, you're doing this to serve your customers. You're doing this to serve your people. You're doing this to serve others. Even though you might feel like the weight of the world is on your shoulders, maybe the reason you feel that way is because you've lost sight of why you're doing what you're doing, and you've started down a track of sustaining yourself and your baggage, and as you said it, you know, all of the entourage that was carrying Goliath's heavy stuff, you know, that some little David could come along and knock you out in a hurry while you're busy picking up your heavy stuff. You know, they could be taking your whole market away.
Delegating your gear.
Rob, it's been a delight to have you on the show. You know, we want to make sure that listeners go to badbobby.com and check out Dr. McKenna's leadership development process. Best tool you've ever seen. You know, how much is a subscription to Bad Bobby now, Rob?
Right now, it's only $60 a year.
Okay, $60 a year. Best $60 investment in developing yourself as a leader that you could ever find. Great content, great assessments. You know, you take those assessments, and I guarantee you, you will find out if there's any baggage in your life that you don't know about that you're carrying. And then the book that you can get just about any place that books are sold, Amazon or others, Dying to Lead. Great title, great content, and make sure that if you're serious about developing yourself as a leader and the leaders in your firm, you got to catch hold of Rob's content. The reason that we asked Rob to be on our board of advisors at excellentcultures.com is because, as you know, now that you've listened to him for a bit, he gets it. And he gets it deep, and he knows what's really going on, and he knows how to cut to the core of the issues that start out little and become big in businesses of all sizes. Rob, you're awesome. Hey. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Steve. If there's anyone who's interested in coming to YRU, too, they can go to clrdspu.org.
And that's the Center for Center for Leadership at SPU, is that right?
Yes.
Give us the web address again.
So it's clrdspu.org, and all the links for YRU for that event in May are coming up or will be there. Any other information, there's a lot of research on there and other resources.
Yeah, and that's a public service event, right?
Yes, it is.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Thank you. We're out of time.
Perfect. You can follow Rob also on Twitter at @drrobmckenna, Dr. Rob McKenna, RobMckenna. We're excited that you came with us again on the journey of business culture. Listeners, thank you for tuning in to Biz Culture Matters, sponsored by ExcellentCultures.com on Clay 1180 AM. We'll be back with you next Saturday, 7 AM. Great guests. Have a good one.